next speaker is, I've been calling you a doctor scientist, and I hope that's correct.
Sure.
Okay. She's a doctor professor scientist. Dr. Professor Patrick.
Patrick.
SpongeBob.
Just had transgender.
Dr. Professor. Pamela Heath is somebody who I really admire. She has all of the education behind her. She's got all of the intellect. And I'm sorry, John, but she happens to be a woman. And I love her. I like that. That's the one thing you don't got there, my friend. She is somebody that I feel like she can empower me because she's done things that I haven't been able to do, which is to get all of the education behind me. She's put it to such good use in writing the books that she's written. If you haven't had a chance to go through it, she does a miraculous job. I have some of her other books, and she just came out with this one. And I'm sure it's going to be just as good as those others. And I listened to her at another lecture that she was speaking at, and she was wonderful. She's knowledgeable, she keeps your attention, and she puts on a good, real good presentation. So, with no further ado, Pamela Heath.
One thing I want to say, I was listening to Mr. Oliver talking a moment ago about how you cannot move spirits on if people want them there. Totally agree. You know, and a lot of people do want them there on an unconscious level because they like the drama, they like the attention. Okay, so, you know, we're only talking about when people want the spirit to leave and the spirit often wants to go too. Now, this actually, the talk I'm going to do today grew out of an earlier book, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. And in doing that book, those who don't know John Klumo, my co-author, he's like the world's expert, literally, on channeling. And you go into his house, and it's like wall-to-wall channeling books. They're everywhere. And I read at least 500 of them myself, literally, in order to create that other book. And as I was going through these books, I began to realize that there was a pattern, that everybody was pretty much talking about the afterlife as if it was a place. And they were talking about, oh, this is what our homes look like, or this is what our clothes look like, or this is what, you know, that kind of stuff. And they weren't really focused on the fact that the afterlife can be thought of as a process, where there's a series of stages of development, just like during life. Now, anyone who's had a class in psychology, how many have studied psychology? Even the beginning class. Okay. Surprise, it's not more. You know that as you move from birth to late adulthood and old age and death, you go through a variety of stages that are referred to as lifespan development. And it depends on which psychologist you read, whether Erickson or Piaget or Maslow or who, as to what those stages are called and what gets accomplished. But the main thing is it's looking at life as development. And it doesn't matter whether you live in Boise, Idaho, or Beijing, you're going to go through these same kind of life stages and have to accomplish similar tasks. And what we realized is that this normal developmental lifespan does not end with death, but continues into the afterlife. Now, it's a little bit arbitrary, but we broke it down into about 10 stages, the first four of which are needed to finish a transition to the afterlife. Because it's pretty obvious to everybody here that just because you're dead, you're not instantly sucked into the light, or you wouldn't have ghosts to go investigate, would you? Clearly, there's a problem here. And the thing about these stages is that if you understand what they need to accomplish, you will be in a better position to know how to help them move on. Because you can recognize where they're stuck, what may be going on, how to address it. And that's why I'm going to talk to you about this today. The first step is to recognize that they are dead. Okay? Now, a little overview first. We did something different from everybody else. You'll sometimes see, like John Edward, talk about the reunion phase and other things. We changed everything to an ING form because this is active. This is not a passive event they're going through. This is things they have to accomplish, things they have to learn. And souls accomplish different things at each step. And as with any human process, for example, grieving, I think most people know Kubler-Ross's stages of grieving that happen with dying, the anger, denial, bargaining, all these things. you'll go back and forth. You don't just do each step once. Sometimes you'll go back and forth a few times. And it's the same with these. They'll sometimes bounce back and forth. However, what I've noticed is that once you get to reuniting with loved ones, very few spirits come back. It's usually these first four where you may have them leave and come back again. Leave and come back again. Once they've done this, if you see them come back, it's usually because they're doing part of their life review and they're with spirit guides and it's not a problem. Just let them do their things. It's just part of what they're learning. So we've got recognizing death, separating from the body, leading spirit helpers, the first group, moving to levels, reuniting with loved ones, which is a second group of spirit helpers that they need. Now, after that, there's recovering, visiting to the living, which is an optional stage, reviewing and judging the lifetime. Everybody talks about this one, the life review, self-judgment. Everyone talks about it. Whether you're talking the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Islamic Book of the Dead, yeah, everybody knows this one. But there's also a phase of doing spiritual work, and then possibly reincarnation, because source is varying in terms of whether they believe reincarnation exists or how it actually occurs. It may be that personality per se doesn't reincarnate, but some other energetic aspect of us does, and that's not clear. These stages can get repeated, and these in particular, recovering, tends to get combined a lot with visiting to the living, reviewing and judging the lifetime, and spiritual work, because these are stressful phases. There's a lot that has to get accomplished here. It can be very emotionally stressful. And so, what do? You recover. Just like every night you might go to sleep. That's your way of recovering. They have recovered too. And it does tend to change as it gets later on in the stages. Visiting the living, I mentioned, can be skipped. It can occur out of order. For example, if their funeral or memorial service is right away, they may race off to it and then come back and get back into their stages. And as I mentioned before, sometimes it can occur in reviewing and stretching the lifetime. I have run into spirits at places where I'm like, there's something different about the spirit. It doesn't feel like a usual ghost. And I'll realize, oh, you're with your guides. You're reviewing their lifetime. And they decided to come back to that physical location where they live in order to better understand what had happened to them and their choices. So if you run into those, don't try to move them on. Doing spiritual work can also get combined with sometimes their spiritual work involves visiting the living. We'll talk about that. One thing I think most of you are well familiar with also is that personality and belief systems do not change. I guess I could use my pointer. And belief systems don't change until the life review and self-judgment stage. And this intensifies with spiritual work. Oh, I turned off my present. Let's do this again. There we go. Recognizing death, learning a new way to perceive the world without sensory organs. Now, those of us who are already pretty intuitive, we've got a head start on everyone else, okay? Because you're used to sensing the world around you without your eyes, ears, touch, normal sensations. But for other people, they have to figure this out. And it's not uncommon that it can take 3 days or longer, according to the literature. So you have no sense organs, you're often very confused. And there can be a lot of things contributing to this confusion. Part of it has to do with the fact they aren't getting normal sensations. They're very much in their head. They don't know what's going on. If you add drugs, illness, violent, unexpected passing, the confusion can be really extreme. And they also have a tendency, as in life, to only perceive what they expect to see. This has a fancy term, which is off the edge here, of cognitive dissonance. It's a psychology term. It is very well known, and I got to tell you, we all do this in everyday life. If something doesn't fit your worldview, you block it out. Someone doesn't believe in ghosts, a ghost can be standing right in front of them doing this, and everyone else is going, look at that! And they're like, I don't see anything. It's cognitive dissonance, fancy term. It's great for skeptics. But we do this in real life. And in fact, anthropologists are probably classic for talking about this with the South Pacific Islanders who could not see the Spanish galleons in their harbor until they lowered the boats into the water to come ashore. Because they had no ability to imagine something that big. They literally blocked it out. Now, if you can block out a Spanish galleon when you're alive, let me tell you, you can certainly block out spirit guides if you want to believe that you're still alive. And there's no such thing as the afterlife. Therefore, you know, I'm not going to see any of this stuff. And I like the movie The Sixth Sense because it really demonstrated that. He didn't see that the way to his office was blocked with boxes. He blocked that out. Because as far as he was concerned, he was still alive. He was still using that doorway going in and out. It was only after he realized he was dead that he could actually see what was truly going on. So it really was a classic for that one. Why are they so sure that they're still alive? Because they feel that way. Some say that they actually feel more alive than they did when they were alive. They sort of have a spirit body. I suspect it's self-created because it will look like how they feel. Be aware, if you see a little child ghost, that doesn't mean they died when they were a child. They could have died when they were 99. That's how they feel that day. So that's how they look. If they feel 99 the next day, they'll look 99. Same ghost. Okay? And I know Lloyd Auerbach, my friend, has run into that with the ghost of Tracy. And she was very aware of it. She's like, yeah, it's just how I feel today. Tomorrow I may feel different, I'll look different. There can be a lot of shock from their passing, especially in cases of violence. So they have to learn to accept what's happened, to accept the death of the body, perceive the world around them, especially others in spirit. Now, one of the things that's really interesting is that they may have an easier time seeing the living than those in spirit. And that's where you guys can come in. And, you know, we talk about it classically as rescue circles, but you don't have to be psychic. If you know there's a ghost there, sorry. If you know there's a ghost there, just talk to the mentally. Don't do it out loud or everyone will think you're crazy. Okay? I mean, as an anesthesiologist, there were times when I would be in the ER, I'd get called to a code, and I'd see the spirit over in the corner of the room. I'm like, oh, this is not going to go well. You know, because he's already left the body. You know, they don't feel like he's coming back. And so, after they called the code, I would stand there just for a moment, silently, not wanting my colleagues to think I'm nuts, and explain what's going on. Look, I'm sorry, your body's died, you need to go to the light, yada, yada, yada. Of course, then they started following me back to the operating room, and it turned out that they see people as a light. So we need to say the really big light, not the little light. Many, many, many ghosts get stuck at this first stage. They can't sense guides. They're confused. They don't understand what's happened. They may even experience it as a fog or a coma, in which case you aren't going to get to them any better than the spirit guides. But if they can perceive the living, because they think they're still alive, then you might be able to communicate to them what's happened and to look, listen, feel for guides trying to get to them. Another interesting thing is they will be wherever you're thinking about. Just like they can look however they think of themselves, that's why they have clothes. There's no store for clothes for ghosts. But you'll create that appearance for yourself. You'll also tend to go to wherever you're thinking of, which is why you usually don't find ghosts at graveyards. You find them where they lived and where they were happy, unless they have a belief system that says, I'm trapped here. And I can't. And then that's all they think about. It's like, oh, God, this horrible place. And then they're stuck there. That's a matter of choice. Okay, back to something like that. Separated from the body is the next stage. And to me, that's recognizing you are not something else. It can be effortless. A lot of people will be out of the body, out, and they look down, there's my body. That's how they realize they're dead. Okay? But there are others, and usually it's through the head, but there are others who, whether it's due to emotional attachment to the body or expectations, have trouble with this stuff. Classically, though, they may talk about a certain thread or a cord or being stuck near the earth plane to live out their time, which gets back to the belief in the late 1800s and 1900s, which may be true, that you would have a life blueprint that you would create before you incarnated. And if you cut that time short, either through accident or suicide, or anything unexpected, that you might have to hang out there until it was your time to go back to the spirit realm. This appears, as far as I can tell, to be mostly a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you believe you're stuck, you will be stuck. If you don't believe you're stuck, you won't be stuck. They seldom need help here. This is the one place that's sort of interesting because time solves it. There are spirits who will talk about feeling their body rotting away through this cord and the worm is eating them and how painful it is and all this other stuff. But once the body's gone, that cord drops away and they're out of it. So I don't tend to see people needing a lot of help at this stage because usually time will solve it sooner or later. Meeting spirit helpers. This is about orienting to their new state. There are two ways of spirit helpers. This is sort of interesting. The first group is smaller in number. It's often like two or three, sometimes it's just one. Their purpose is multiple. They provide cues of death. Okay, they may appear as an angel with wings. If you're expecting an angel with wings to reach you on the other side, then you may suddenly realize, gee, maybe I'm on the other side. If you're a suicide bomber, they may reach you as a virgin or a holy man. Anything to get you to go with them. Okay? They can look as an animal, as human, it doesn't matter. But they're going to try and meet the dead's initial expectations to avoid cognitive dissonance so that they can be accepted and seen, and this, they can get the spirit to go with them. They will orient and reassure newcomers. They also have an interesting purpose I don't see discussed very often, to buffer the spirit realm from contamination. When you go to the other side, you've got a lot of emotions, and you're like, you're grieving. You've lost your body, you've lost your friends, you've lost your home, you've lost your job, you've lost your pets. You lost everything. There can be a lot of emotion. Sometimes there's a lot of anger if you die through violence and a murder. Or a lot of sadness. And they'll actually create, they describe it as like a cool sheet of vibrating glass and sphere around you just to try and sort of pull that emotion in so it doesn't affect every single person and every single spirit around you. And it seems like they do this really pretty much for everybody's service. They often take the newly dead to their next stop. Now, I say offer because you have the right to refuse. And some spirits do that. So if a spirit refuses to go with them through the light, what usually happens is they're patient. They come back later. If you've changed your mind, ready to go now? Oh, okay. But you do have a choice. There's a question as to whether they're always present. That's something that came up a number of... Because so many people say, look, when I died, I didn't see a spirit guide. I don't think they were there. I must have caught them by surprise. According to the spirit guides, they're always there. And it sort of makes sense. If you always have a guardian angel with you, there's always going to be somebody around who could do this role. This, by the way, is often considered a form of spiritual work.
Yeah. Are those spirit guides with us? Are they around us more often? Because human bodies have been the same guide.
These seem to be different usually. These are usually specialists. And they may actually be specialists in the way in which you die sometimes. Moving through levels, sometimes seen as a tunnel of light or a rapid movement past a variety of landscapes. If you're in Japan, you might see a bridge. Okay? Different visions. Because again, it's not physical. It's however your unconscious mind or your spirit is interpreting the experiences you're going through and trying to communicate to you so you understand. It's very much like psychics though. There's a lot of variation between psychics as to how many levels there are to move through. Everybody agrees there's a physical plane. And everybody pretty much agrees there's a lower astral. And that's the area that is closest to the physical plane. And when we talk about different levels, we're talking about vibration or degrees of light. Usually the higher up you go, the more light-filled it's described as being. Now, I think the best way to describe this is if I were to take this, cubic foot of air, you don't see anything there, right? But at the same time, you've got radio waves, you've got cell phone signals, you've got TV signals, you've got all this. If you have a way to dial in that frequency, you can see that too. And I think this is the same. They're all interpenetrating. They're all taking up the same space, but different levels of frequency. And as a psychic, I know I often feel like I'm tuning a radio up and down, depending on what I'm trying to get and what I'm trying to see. So if I am ghost investigating, I will deliberately shift my consciousness to a different level to pick up what's going on than when I'm just trying to ignore them. Medium levels. This is where most people end up after they travel through the tunnel or past the landscapes. And it varies whether you're talking about how many of these levels there are, where you end up, whether you're in the lower end, that, the middle, the higher end. If you're Mother Teresa, you might go straight to the higher levels, so to say. And then, of course, the highest level is often referred to as the source or the light. This is about going where you're comfortable. It's not about punishment, oh, you were good, you deserve this. It's where are you comfortable? Where do you feel like you fit in? Don't you love technology? Reuniting. It's more orientation, and it's realizing what you've gained, not just what you've lost. So you have lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of spirits waiting for you. They may not even be people you ever met in your life, but the people who know of you or care about you, they might be loved ones, distant ancestors, friends, pets, not uncommon. They usually show up after you've either reached your final level or when you're getting close to it. Sometimes they sort of tag team with the other group of spirit guides and sort of take over and finish taking you the rest of the way. It distracts the souls from their losses and grieving and helps focus them on what they've gained. And what I see is usually after they get to this point, they don't back out and go into the light. I have seen them, take off for the tunnel and come back again. Take off and come back again. No. If they get to this point, usually they stay there. Usually. It can be postponed if souls have trouble feeling emotions, because this is very draining. Just think about it. Anytime you've been in a really emotional situation, wears you out. And it does them too. So the next step is, needless to say, recovery, which is a mix of things. It can be sleep, energy balancing, solitude, banished communities. Sleep is the commonest healing method you see in the channel literature. People fall asleep. And it's used for all types of things, whether emotional or whether your spirit body is considered weak because you've had a prolonged illness or for other causes. It's sort of interesting. I can't tell from the literature if it's spontaneous or if it's induced by guides or a little bit of both. My guess is it's a bit of both. It's like, here, let's help you go to sleep. When you wake up, you'll be less emotional. You'll be calm. There are also hospices or healing centers, which have been described by a number of psychics, and they'll instill positive energy to make them feel better. Now, as a psychic, if you are psychic, you can do that too. You can sort of send positive vibes their way. Sometimes it involves isolation. That can be for those who have trouble healing with others. Sometimes that isolation is self-chosen. I don't want to deal with any human being again. I'm going to be on this planet by myself. Make your own planet. Or you might be a suicide bomber, in which case they say, maybe we'll keep you separate till you're ready to integrate with the other people. Sitting settings are very common, and it's very often you'll see people talk about pastoral settings. They might have bunny rabbits and kittens and little puppy dogs and butterflies and just peaceful, beautiful scenes. Or it might feel like your home. You're back in Kansas, man, in your room. You're finished with the rainbow. When you get later on, you'll show up in managed communities. And this gets to that point again that you can create instantly anything you think of. When you're a human being, you're not used to having disciplined thoughts. You haven't had to. If whatever you pops in your mind instantly happens, it's a problem. Think of a Tyrannosaurus Rex. You don't want it to just suddenly show up, right? So they have managed communities where the spirit guides will try and fix things in place so that if you have a straight thought, it won't throw things off. You won't have to cope with it. You can kind of relax mentally and not have to be focused on your own discipline all the time. As you get more discipline, that becomes less of an issue. But especially when they're doing spiritual work, you see a lot of spirits talk about coming back to managed community to rest and relax and take it easy. Visiting the living seems to be an optional stage. Now, there are psychics who believe that every spirit goes to the MMR service. I haven't seen that. I don't know if that's just because they're hidden from me, but certainly in the literature, there are spirits who say, I didn't go because I didn't want to. It was too emotional. I couldn't cope with it, and I was afraid of getting sucked back into the group. So it does seem to be varied.
Sometimes it's just to satisfy curiosity. I'm bring my granddaughters to it. We've all seen that. Boy, grandparents show up more than anybody, I think, around people. They may be there to pass on information. The will is in the bottom drawer. It might be to ask for forgiveness. I wronged you. And this is part of spiritual work. After you've done your life review, you realize you really messed up. And you ask for forgiveness. It might be to get some kind of insight. I see that as like with when you're coming back for your life review and you're there and it's like, oh, I noticed something I didn't realize when I was alive. Oh, this makes more sense. Can be to provide comfort and emotional support. That's a big one. How many people talk about you're upset and loved ones come back in your dreams or in your sleep or just to give you advice, suggestions. I know I have a friend whose dad came back to give her business advice when she was still working. They may be there to act as a spirit guide or a guardian angel. Depending on what terminology is. Reviewing and judging the lifetime. Learning from the past and what other life choices would have meant. And this is undoubtedly the most common stage in the literature. Nobody skips this. No. From the time you're an infant until you die. I don't see the panel. You know, a lot of people in near-death experiences talk about a panel of three people. Very common in the literature. And self-judgment, from what we can tell. If you look at the older literature, Egyptian Book of the Dead, I think they talk about someone else judging you. But most modern literature feels differently. It's more than an intellectual exercise. It is literally reliving it. They are walking in they're not only their own shoes, because of everyone they hurt. They're feeling it firsthand. It's very draining. You can see why they need recovery from it. It's also about seeing what other choices would have led to. And I think the most poetic way I saw this described is a spirit guide mentioned it's like throwing a stone into a pond and seeing how the ripples go out. And if I had thrown the stone over here, it would have had different ripples. This would have happened. If I had thrown it over here. So it's about seeing all choices, not in a way that's good or bad, but just what would have happened if you had made different choices so you can better understand the meaning of your own choices. This is repeated as many times as needed to learn every truth. Spirits talk about this. You don't just go through the life review once. It's over and over again, and then let's look at a deeper level. The good thing is it's supervised by guides because they have a balanced focus on both the good and the bad. They don't just focus on what you did wrong, but also what you did right, which we have a tendency to ignore as human beings. Intent is of major importance here. They really focus on that. If your intent was positive, even if the outcome was bad, you're not going to be as harshly looked at. They're going to be like, oh, you know, look at your intent. It was really pretty good. So it didn't work out the way you intended, but you tried. And it does seem to be self-judgment. Spiritual work is self-chosen to allow one to put into action what they've learned. I will say, though, the guides will sometimes suggest you might want to do this to learn from it. But it is basically self-chosen. No one's forced to do something they don't want to do. It includes a wide range of activities. It can vary over time. It can be solitary. It can just involve going off on that planet by yourself and meditating and thinking about your choices. That's considered self-work. That's okay. Or it can involve working with others, whether living or dead. It's a very common reason given for why a spirit chooses to communicate to a medium. So a lot of times if you look at the channel books, the spirit will say, look, this is part of my spiritual work. I'm communicating this information back to you, to the physical world. Very frequently, guide work for either the living or the dead. A lot of them volunteer to be spirit creatures, especially if they died in a particular way. It's like Alcoholics Anonymous. They sort of feel like if you've been there, done that, you'll understand it better. And they can't say, well, you don't know how I felt. Because they do know how you felt. They went through it. In fact, that's where a lot of the information for the suicide book came from. Those people who said, you know what, I did this. It was a mistake. And I go back and work with others so that they understand. I know exactly how they feel. I did it. And I'm telling you, don't go this path. At least for traditional suicide. try to influence a physical plane for the better. Someone will actually focus on trying to heal the planet or help us move karmically forward. And of course, planning the next lifetime if you believe in the incarnation will try to get more karmic. So this is just sort of a guide of some of the many, many things. There are other forms of work that can be done, and basically the sky's the limit. They can help manage communities. Some of them will provide entertainment for the public spirits. You can have artists painting, you can have musicians playing, all kinds of things. Sources vary in what they say is possible for reincarnation. It does appear, though, that souls make a life blueprint in advance in order to plan what lessons to master, with whom and where they'll live, what karma they want to get rid of, who they're going to meet. And by the way, karma isn't just on an individual level. It can occur on a family level, a group level, a national level. My guess is a planetary level. It can be more complex than just an individual. And then guides help with these plans. If you want to know more about reincarnation or you're sort of, you know, not certain about all this stuff, I would read some of the books by Ian Stevenson. He was a University of Virginia psychiatrist who did a lot of work in third world countries and had some really interesting findings. The University of Virginia is still pursuing this. I think they have a database of, I can't remember how many thousand, it's been a few years since I talked to them, but thousands and thousands of cases where usually it's children between 3 and 5 who remembered a past life with sufficient detail that it was sort of impressive. Adjustment problems. The one thing you take with you is your psychological baggage. I so wish we could leave that behind. Grief, rigid belief systems, fundamentalists have trouble. Ignorance about the afterlife. Why skeptics?
Do they have a ton?
Regrets. Inability to love, because this is a world that operates based on love. If you can't love, it becomes a problem. Inability to forgive. Boy, if you can't forgive others, you're going to have a heck of a time forgiving yourself. And that's a big part of that life of you, is at some point you've got to forgive yourself, move on, figure out how you're going to make amends as far as make you feel better, and maybe them. Addiction is a problem. Addiction can continue into the afterlife. Addiction has a psychological component. It's interesting that if you see somebody who had a problem due to brain, developmental delay or other things, it was congenital, had nothing to do with imbibing the wrong substances, that will drop away when they die. They'll be normal, like almost instantly, from what I can tell. Addiction, a lot of addicts, they still want their fix. And that may be a reason why they hang out around the earth plane, is they want to precariously get high or get drunk by hanging out with people who are using them. Stubbornness is an interesting problem. People who are stubborn really have problems in the afterlife. You don't want to listen to anybody. Why should I listen to a guy? Why should I get with you to the light? You know, why should I believe anything about this new reality and accept your orientation? Stubborn people can take a really long time to go through the life with you in self-judgment, you know. Spirit guide said the easiest way to think of the afterlife is as an ongoing process of cleansing and refinement of the soul. That really comes up. The more you do in the earth plane, the less you have to do over there. It's a good head start. Because from what I can see, what you do in the earth plane actually is faster. You would think it's faster in the spirit realm. They tell us it's the opposite. That's part of why they keep coming back. So the more work you can do during your lifetime, the less you have to do later on. It can be a prolonged process. I saw some reports of thousands of years for some souls, like in World War II, with right concentration camps type people. All souls have guides who try to help. They don't give up on anybody. I don't care how dark you are. There's somebody trying to get through to you. There's a choice whether victims meet those who harm them. It has to be agreeable and safe for all parties. And not only safe for them, but safe for those around them. It was sort of interesting. There was a spirit guy came back and said, for the suicide bomber, said the suicide bomber and the mother he had killed had agreed to meet, but because she had a daughter who wouldn't understand that, because in their culture, mother didn't, you know, meet strange men like this. They weren't letting that happen. So they make sure it's agreeable to everybody. Forgiveness and being willing to let go of your own story helps souls progress faster. You can start that in this lifetime. Recognize that you are not your collection of attitudes, beliefs, you know, not just your body. You're more than that, and you can choose what kind of person you want to be. Can spirit trick the living? This is where Lloyd and I disagree a bit. Lloyd Auerbach and I are good friends. We've known each other for years, but I agree with him that most of the time the answer is no. That most of the time it's a matter of what you allow them. In other words, like the worst thing to fear is fear itself. That you hurt yourself because you get freaked out about this. And that's common. I think there are some exceptions. I think they're rare, but they happen. I think there's mind-matter interaction, which is also known as mind over matter, psychokinesis, used to call it things like telekinesis. But where they can push you down the chairs. I mean, it's not your imagination they're pushing you down the chair. You really feel a hand push you. It can be telepathic influence. I think we've all heard people who were sleeping in a house and it wasn't even necessarily an attachment or something, but just, you know, they're thinking, oh, you're a bad person, you start to move down. Oh, I'm a bad person, there are these things. Sorry. I separate attachment from possession. To me, attachment is more just a general influence, and it can be accidental, especially if you're sad or lonely. I mean, there are times, I suspect, you know, you've had this too, where you're walking down a street and all of a sudden you feel sad. You're like, wait a minute, I wasn't sad a second ago. Where's this coming from? And I'll tune in, and there's a spirit with me, you know, and they sort of think maybe I can help them instead of hanging out. They're not trying to make me sad. They're not trying to hurt me. They're not even aware they're influencing me. Or I'll start, that's hysterical. Well, I live in Alameda. I'll start whistling the Shores of Tripoli. And I'm like, got a Marine spirit with me again. So that's sort of influence. And it's not always deliberate. It can be accidental. They'll sometimes even apologize profusely once they realize they're doing it. It can be deliberate, though. And it's usually with addicts. And a lot of spirits, a lot of psychics have reported if you go into a bar, you may see spirits hanging out that used to drink and are encouraging people to over imbibe so that they can get that high with various things. I hate walking down photograph out of drug addicts. Possession, I'm always sort of on the fence whether this exists or not. Whether it's deliberate, I have seen possession where it was voluntary, where the person wanted to be possessed because they felt the gave them power. But certainly, a lot of the channel literature believes in it. Now, moving spirits on, you don't need to be psychic to move spirits on. There are ways anybody can do it. Certainly, if only by explaining that they're dead and to look for their guides and go to the light. You'll sometimes have spirits who ask you to pass on messages. They'll say, I'll do it, but first I want you to pass on a message. I say, no! Don't do it! And I've been on both ends of this now. My parents were killed a couple years ago, you might know. And people were strangers, absolute strangers, were busy passing me messages. I had no desire to hear, partly because I was having first-hand messages. I do need them to tell me things. But if it's an absolute stranger, why should they believe you? They don't know you. They don't know your credibility. They might think that you're some kind of shyster trying to get to them. It just brings up anger and grief all over again. Don't do it. What I do is I tell them, look, if you go to the light, your guides will help you come back. You can tell them the message yourself. It's so much better to do it firsthand. You can come back to them in dreams and sleep. Give them the messages, and then you can get the warm fuzzies of feeling your love firsthand, whatever. Much, much better than a stranger coldly going up to them. I mean, it's a different thing if you're a professional and they're going to you for those messages. They solicited the messages for you. Do not, as an absolute stranger, just go up to someone and say, hey, did you know your Aunt Mabel says this? Don't do it, okay? They will get angry. I certainly was very angry a few times. Most spirits just need orientation. It can be done telepathically. You don't have to make everybody around you think you're nuts. Of course, now with your cell phone, in your ear, you can talk out loud. They'll think you're on the phone. Don't agree to pass out messages. You can ask spirits they trust to come and get them, or your guides to help them. And this is sort of interesting because they don't have to be dead. A guide can look like whatever they want to look like. They can look like Gabriel with his horn. They can look like a fuzzy little puppy dog that you really love. They can look like anything. So I will say, I ask that anything or anyone they trust and would believe in come from the light and come get them. And it might be that particular spirit, or it might be a guide who looks like that particular spirit, and that's what they would say and how they would feel, et cetera. But you can ask for help. You don't have to do it by yourself. If you're psychic, you can also sense what they will accept, or who they will accept. I'll sometimes run through a list in my head. They can be easily moved on in groups. I am surprised how few people talk about this. I will see shows, and they'll say, oh, this is so hard, I have to move this one to the light. Oh, I don't have the energy to move another. I'm sorry, you have to stay. And I'm like, please, I got trained. I got trained from the light. You can have conductors who are spirit guides who get everybody on the train. You can give out balloons, you can give out box lunches. You don't have to, I mean, you can make it fun and creative. In fact, I had one spirit who was having so much fun leaving, he kept coming back just when he could leave it. And finally, it's like, no! But you can make it fun. Little kids, they can go on a rocking horse to the light, you know, with their favorite puppy. It doesn't matter. It's the sky's the limit. It's your imagination's the limit. And the more you use the imagination, the more fun it is, and the less you burn out. I'll tell you that. But you can move them in groups. You know, I don't bring a plane from the light if they die in a plane accident. But within judgment, you know, you can bring a cruise ship from the light, anything you like. Pick them up. You know, one thing I forgot to mention, I put it at the middle to remind myself it's important. Protect yourself. Okay? Before you even go on an investigation. Whatever you like for protection, whether it be a prayer of protection or imagine a sphere of white light around you, but protect yourself before you go. And when you come back, please clean your own aura. You can't imagine just white light or whatever works for you. Cleaning your aura, getting rid of any energy you picked up while you were there. I can't tell you how many people I've seen come home with crap. You know? And I'm not even just talking spirits. I'm talking just the energy. When he was talking about residual energy, the parapsychology term for that is place memory. And if you want to read more about that, I have actually some journal articles on it. They're free on my website for download. You just go to PF Gallery. But I always clean up afterward. I also clean up the place. Again, you can use your imagination. Mr. Clean is at work. He has his magic eraser. As a woman, I will imagine a vacuum cleaner. The other extension is to the light. So I vacuum clean. And everything's going straight to the light. And they can sort it out. Any stray spirits are sucked up to the light. So I love my voice. I don't talk usually this much. Don't take it home with you. And this is just some things I just mentioned. If you make it comfortable for them to go, they're more apt to go. Like I said, I only had that one who kept coming back because he was having too much fun. Every once in a while you find somebody who still won't go. As before, always protect yourself. Consider outside help. The simplest thing is tell them to go firmly. You know, it's something that John mentioned is really true. If the person asking them to go has second thoughts, they kind of like the drama of having a ghost here, or I want a little more data. It doesn't have to be on a conscious level. It can be an unconscious level. Gee, they're going to be hard to move on. Or as soon as they've moved on, either they'll be back or a similar spirit will get drawn in. But if you really tell them to go and you mean it, a lot of times that's all it takes. You can ask your guides or their guides to help because they have guides too, and their guides don't want them to stay any more than you want them to stay. It's not helping them to hang out there.
you know, they need to finish the process so they can get to their, you know, reviewing their lifetime, spiritual work, move on, have a new life, not hopes. It's boring being ghosts, usually. You can surround them with a bubble of light and sort of move it on the light. About two or three times in my life, I have had an entity that I felt was so dangerous to the people who were there, the living, that I actually wrapped them in chains of white light and had guys carry them. I don't do that very often. I think it has a potential for karma if you're not very careful how you choose to use it. And you have to work from a completely neutral or a completely loving place. Because any anger, any fear is a handle they can use against you. And I actually don't like drama. So it's pretty, I mean, as an anesthesiologist, if someone's dying on me, people usually couldn't even talk because I just go into this emotionless mode of just, you have to work as fast as you can, do what you need to, yada, yada, yada. It's the same with hostile spirits. And you can do this from a distance, and sometimes it's easier from a distance. It's a psychic. Clean up, shield the place afterwards. You can, and whenever you're doing a shield, whether it's for yourself or someone else, always imagine that it's self-sustaining. Otherwise, you're going to drain yourself out. So you just say, okay, I am surrounded by white light. It is self-sustaining. It takes no energy out of me. Anything negative or hostile that comes in just fuels it to be that much stronger. You can do the same about a place. You can actually create a sphere and sort of expand the sphere and push things out. But the problem then is, where are they going to go? Somebody else's problem now. So I tend to like to move them to the light. So just review the stages of the afterlife, recognizing death, which is learning a new way to perceive, separating from the body, realizing you are not just the body. This is hard for some people. It really is, I think. Meeting spirit helpers, orienting to your new situation, moving through levels, reuniting with loved ones, recovering, regaining emotional balance and wellness, visiting the living, having a new relationship to the living, reviewing and judging the lifetime, learning from past choices, doing spiritual work is putting that insight gained to use, and reincarnating is dealing with karma and having new opportunities to learn. This is basically in the handbook to the afterlife. This book just came out a few weeks ago. I don't know what's going on with UPS. They're having trouble getting it out to people. But part one is mostly John Kingles and sort of an overview of different attitudes about the afterlife, and also talks about his father. He's talked about that before, but he sort of goes into it in more detail. Part two is a Cliff Notes version, and I use that word. We actually use that as a guide when we were writing. John would be like, we need more of this. Oh, we should prove it academically with this stuff. Like, John, Cliff Notes. Cliff Notes. So this is just really a brief summary. We don't have the quotes of the earlier book. If you want the quotes, the original sources, you do need to get the suicide book, because that's where a lot of them are. But it will just sort of go through the basics of the stages, and it does talk about how anyone psychic or not can connect with the dead, whether to maintain contact rate, and this includes moving spirits onto a light. And then coming soon is my other book, My Matter Interaction, Historical Reports, Research, and First-Hand Account. This is actually my specialty. I sort of got dragged into this other one with John. But My Matter Interaction is a newer, more accurate term for the phenomena once known as psychokinesis, which translates to soul movement. There's a lot of things like spoon bending, healing that don't involve movement, and telekinesis, which meant movement at a distance. So we're just sort of switching to a little bit of a more accurate term that talks about all the different range of phenomena, fire walking, you know, that kind of stuff is all included in this. And it will be out fall, they're saying now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gloria. Great conference.